Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just, for me, has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better, and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And hello, I am Carol Jurgensen Sheets, aka Carol the Coach, here talking about sex help with Carol the Coach. If you've listened to the show before, you know that this is the place to go if you have questions about sexual addiction. Or maybe you have questions about love addiction. And regardless of what your issue may be, I know that my listeners across the board are either wondering whether they might be experiencing some sort of addiction, like love addiction or sex addiction, or they have somebody in their lives that they are really concerned about, and they have listened to the show to try to figure out what they can do. You know, this is an area that people are not necessarily comfortable talking about. And so what do? They keep this to themselves. They hold their own shame or their partner's shame close to their hearts. And they typically try to get on the internet, get some information. Perhaps you take a test. Maybe you go and you go to Amazon and you get a good book on how to deal with these kind of difficulties. But this is the show where you can listen to the experts in the field of love and sex addiction talk about what they know to be true. And regardless of where you're coming from, it's always good to get information and to become educated about what resources are available to you, what theories are in practice, and how to get the help that you may need. Now, I'm really excited tonight because we're going to be interviewing Dr. Linda Hatch. And Linda has written a guide for sex addicts who are starting over. In other words, she is talking about relationships in recovery, hence the name of her book, Relationships in Recovery, A Guide for Sex Addicts Who Are Starting Over. And you know, I have to admit that this is a book that I've not seen in print anywhere in terms of the topic. You know, we do a lot of talking about what do you do if you think you have a problem, and we do a lot of talking about how do you develop healthier relationships in recovery. But I have not read any books on stepping out into the dating world. And let's face it, that can be a frightening prospect, you know, finding a new love or rebuilding an old one, and forming an intimate, passionate bond can seem daunting. So Linda talks about how to assess whether you're ready for a relationship, and then she goes over all the different aspects of, you know, who you might be interested in. What is your style in relationship? And that's always good to know because, let's face it, when you have had an addiction, oftentimes you haven't felt good about the way you choose a partner. And we always say you got to get healthy first before you get into a relationship so that you don't magnetize to you a person who has just as many issues as you, perhaps in a different way. Some of you know that I talk about the five fears of intimacy. You know, when people are thinking about getting in relationship with another, and if they've been traumatized or hurt in the past, they typically experience one of five fears of intimacy. Now, just think about this for a second. Could this be you? Are you somebody who fears being close to people because you don't want to be abandoned? Or maybe you fear getting close to people because you're actually afraid of rejection. You know, those are two very separate things, although they can feel very much alike. Are you afraid of intimacy because you're afraid of hurting others? Or how about the man or the woman who fears intimacy because they've been hurt in the past and they're afraid of being hurt again? And last but not least, are you somebody who fears merger? You know, you're afraid if you get involved in a relationship, you're going to lose your own sense of identity. And you don't want to do that. More than likely because you lacked an identity in your own life growing up as a kid. Well, those five fears of intimacy actually contribute to people who have difficulty with relationships and then use addictive behaviors to kind of cope with that. Now, I'm going to ask you, Dr. Hatch has an addictive relationship self-test. And in her book, she asks you 15 questions. Be thinking about this for a minute. I think you'll find that a lot of us have experienced at least three or four of these childhood and relationship issues in the past. One of the questions she asks is, growing up, I didn't see my parents as consistently loving and contented with each other. Sound like you? Or, my relationships typically start with an intense sexual attraction and rapid involvement. I find it easy to start relationships, but they always get complicated. Well, no kidding. You know, their relationships are hard in any situation and circumstance, but what typically happens is that it is very rewarding to work through the issues that you may feel that you have with that person. And in healthy relationships, my goodness, when you have conflict, it actually breeds intimacy. In unhealthy relationships, it may cause you to fight. It may cause you to flee, or it may cause you to freeze. Part of her test says, I sometimes think I stay in a relationship because I'm afraid of being on my own. Or, I am afraid of my partner's anger. Or, I sometimes placate or manipulate my partner to avoid confronting things. I find it easy to get into thinking that my partner is to blame. My partner and I don't talk about our relationships. We don't talk about our feelings. You know, interestingly enough, I would say that in working with addicts, one of the primary issues and problems is that addicts don't identify what they're feeling. They gloss over their feelings. And, you know, the other issue is that addicts typically don't take 100% responsibility for their behavior until they begin to get healthy. And when they get healthy, they go through the process of always saying, how did I contribute to this problem? And what do I need to do to change it? And how can I be kind and gentle to myself as I do? And how can I accept my imperfections exactly as they are? Now, if you're thinking, well, I do that, then let me tell you, you have some serious recovery. Because truly, it's not about being perfect. It's about accepting your own imperfections, not necessarily seeing your life as a failure, but asking yourself, how'd you grow stronger, and what did you learn from your situation? And we all know that if you're in recovery from sexual addiction, you have worked hard on yourself. There's no doubt about it. This is a hard process, but the benefits are incredibly rewarding. Many of you know that I have a husband who is in recovery from alcoholism, and I spend a lot of time with a family of choice, with a lot of recovered addicts, and I don't happen to have a drug or alcohol or sex addiction, but when people ask me, Carol, why do you spend so much time with people who have had such tough times? I can almost always assure them that the women and the men that I hang out with are constantly working on themselves. They're looking for self-improvement, and, you know, that's what I want to do. I just got done, I was in New York for a few days, and what kind of books did I read? You guessed it. I read self-help novels. Well, not novels, self-help books and autobiographies. You know, I just can't get enough about people. I just love to read their stories. And then I love to hear the newest theories on how one can help oneself and become the best person ever. And, you know, taking 100% responsibility for yourself, I mean, what I want you to do is to use what I call the four tools of conflict. They're my own, Carol the Coach, four tools of conflict, and they go like this. You know, if you got somebody who's really mad at you, the first thing you do is ask, how did I contribute to the problem? Because you are 100% accountable. But in that 100%, I want you to assume that 90% is about the situation and 10% is about you. And to say, you know what? I am going to work on myself, but I'm also going to not take on this entire issue. I am going to look at what I have to learn from it. I'm going to use reframing, but I'm not going to feel damaged or use a lot of self-talk in a negative way because I didn't handle things right. Then the third tool of conflict is to say, you know, I'm not going to give anybody the power to make me feel angry, sad, lonely, inadequate, insecure. And the fourth thing is to have faith. Faith in your relationships, faith in yourself, and faith in a higher power. You know, tonight I was talking to somebody who's really struggling with his recovery. And he said, I don't buy that spirituality stuff. I am my own God. I make the choices. And I want to be able to depend on myself. And although that might look like he's taking 100% responsibility, he's struggling because we are not rocks. We are people that need people. We need communities of people. We need their support, we need their love, we need their accountability. You know, there's nothing better than somebody who cares about me that says, Carol, you're working too hard. Carol, you're moving too fast. Carol, you didn't make the right decision there. You know, it helps me to self-reflect, but here's the key. I don't take that information and feedback as criticism. I just don't do it. I take it as helpful feedback. And then I go, okay, what can I do differently next time? And I let the rest go. Boy, forgiveness is absolutely imperative when you're working in addiction. Now, if you have a question and you would like to call, the number is 646-595-3284. Dr. Hatch and I will be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have. And again, her book is Relationships in Recovery. It's a guide for sex addicts who are starting over. And this book is just chock full of good advice, very solid. It's an easy read. It gives you exercises, and it has a lot to do with self-reflection. So, Dr. Hatch, welcome to the Sex Help with Carol the Coach show. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for writing this inspiring book. I mean, there just doesn't seem to be enough information out there for people in recovery who want to improve their sense of self and their sense of relationship. So tell me, what made you write the book?
Well, I mean, you pretty well said it. I think I, you know, both for personal reasons and for professional reasons, I felt like there was a gap. I noticed that there were an awful lot of people who were in good recovery and were, you know, eager to enjoy the fruits of recovery and to have a good relationship, and they didn't have a partner. And I noticed that there were an awful lot of books out there for recovering couples, guides for couples, getting past, you know, all of the initial problems of discovery and disclosure and treatment of sex addiction with a partner. And so I thought there were quite a few things available for couples, but nothing really that I could see at all available for the single person who was in good recovery, but, you know, was kind of clueless about how to go about dating, you know, how they're going to do it differently. They may feel that, you know, they've been through all this work in recovery. They're not the same person they were. And, you know, how to put that into practice, what are going to be the differences between what they did in the past and what, you know, they hope to have in the future. So I that's what I did. I was trying to kind of, you know, share some thoughts and also provide some kind of concrete workbook kind of exercises and things that people could do to help plan for things like going out in the dating world for the first time.
Well, and that's what I found so helpful in this book. I mean, really, you set up some needed guidelines about relationships, and certainly many of the men and women that I work with that are in healthy recovery, they don't trust themselves when it comes to how to meet people and what boundaries to have. I mean, I was just talking with a man tonight who hooked up with a woman. He was in recovery, and he hooked up with her, and he said, you know, we're going to go slow in this relationship. But she was used to the old person, felt very rejected when he didn't come on to her, and basically challenged him and was encouraging him to jump right back into bed quickly to show her that she was needed and wanted. And he was like, boy, this can be a struggle, especially when you are reviving old relationships and you're different. So
yes,
tell
absolutely.
Us about some of the guidelines that, you know, you have put in this book to help recovering addicts.
Well, yeah, and I just want to say that I agree that there is a lot of confusion about how to approach either an existing partner in a new way or a new person that's a potential partner. And I think that that addicts, you know, we all know they come from backgrounds in which there may have been a lot of problems in their early history in terms of developing a sense of secure attachment with their caregivers and so on and so forth. They may have had, and I think this is the case, very few models. So there's like clear-cut image in their mind of what, you know, how to proceed and what a loving and supportive and nurturing relationship is supposed to look like, since they never maybe observed it in their own parents. And this, I know, is the case with me. And so I think there's, you know, there's not much to go on. And I think so, you know, I think that they need to have specific planning tools, which is kind of what I was after with this book, was to have people have a way to look at the way that they conducted a relationship, their relationships, if they had any in the past, and to kind of understand, come to, you know, do like a relationship timeline, like you do in other aspects of recovery, to do a timeline of their relationships and kind of come up with what I call a relationship scenario, their typical relationship scenario. And I think we all think we know this, but until you put it down, you know, on paper, I think it's different. And to see, and then to really look at, and I also talk a lot about this, about how that particular configuration, like maybe picking people who were damaged, picking people where you feel more powerful than them, or they're more powerful than you, all kinds of relationships, scenarios where maybe there's a lot of distance, not a lot of intimacy, you know, ships passing in the night, that kind of relationship, or conversely, a relationship where there's an awful lot of high drama that, you know, just distracts from and prevents really any bonding and intimacy because there's always some kind of uproar. So I think, you know, identifying the typical relationship scenario, the typical style and atmosphere of the relationship that the person has had in the past, and understanding particularly how that helped support the addiction, because that's what I believe. I believe that we choose relationships as addicts, which allow us to continue to be addicts. And so when you're starting over in recovery, you're starting over as a different person. And
oh, absolutely.
Looking for,
obviously, in relationships, you choose what feels familiar or what you witnessed as a child. And now that you're in recovery, you're looking for the new and the different and the healthy. And so you offer, through this timeline, one way to really look at your patterns to make sure you don't jump into the same pattern.
Right. And I also have a couple of other exercises. Just the beginning things has to do with kind of taking a realistic look at what kind of partner you want and what kind of partner you can be, so that you bring the two into focus. So we don't, you know, because addicts, I think, tend to live their intimate life, as it were, in a fantasy world, the fantasy world of sex addiction. So they don't, you know, a real person, you know, they may not really think about, well, what do I really want in a partner? And am I, you know, am I asking for something? Am I asking for somebody that looks like, you know, what I viewed when I watched pornography? When I, you know, am I asking for some airbrushed, perfect person? You know, and I think so reality has to infringe, you know, on the whole concept of what is the right partner for you. And then I also have other, you know, other tools that they get into later on about dating and so on.
Well, you know, you brought the airbrushing into play, and I certainly know that for the longest time, when somebody's really working on recovery, if they're not in relationship, they're encouraged not necessarily to be, so that they can work on themselves as well as they can calm down the brain, their reward center, and perhaps look at sex differently than they've ever looked at it before. And that's really exciting, even if initially that can feel boring. And so oftentimes I know that my clients fear that, you know, they've heard Okay, sex addiction is an intimacy disorder. And I know that you have some special thoughts about that. So can you tell us a little bit about, is there a cure for an intimacy issue? And what do you see in terms of sex addiction and intimacy disorders?
I have to say that I don't think that addiction treatment, 12-step work, sex addiction treatment will necessarily impact your intimacy ability. I think being able to be intimate means a whole set of skills, and that they're different and related to, but different from what we learn in recovery. So I think you have another 12 steps after the 12 steps, or if you want to put it that way. And I think that you can build on the recovery skills, the skills of, you know, being able to look at your own behavior, be honest, learn to be empathic, learning to listen. You know, those are basic to recovery, learning to reach out for help, learning to accept input, you know, getting rid of some of that ego. I think all those things are recovery skills we get in recovery, but they can be applied to, starting an intimate relationship. But I think there needs to be some chance to practice doing it, because I think what happens is that, just as you were saying, the old, deeply ingrained patterns of what kind of relationships we chose and what kind of partners tends to creep back in the first, I call it the first relationship after recovery syndrome, which is, to go right back to doing what you did before. And it's almost unavoidable, I think. But I think that if people are paying attention and they're thinking, they can analyze that and see that fairly quickly and then start to make some, changes in their thinking. I think there's a lot of ways in which you can dodge intimacy, and that, sex addicts have been doing it all their life. So, mm-hmm. Because the addiction is to avoid the stress and the pain, really, of intimacy. Addiction is intimacy. Is one definition of addiction, sex addiction, is intimacy avoidance. And I think that's true. I think, that's part of what we're doing when we use sex as an addiction, is avoiding the fear, the insecurity, the shame around actual intimacy. And, there's a saying in sex addiction recovery people that getting into a relationship is like putting Miracle Grow on your problems. And I think, the reason that they say that, I think, is because it starts to activate all that shame that surrounds relating and fear and, the intimacy disability that is part and parcel of the whole thing. So I think that runs pretty deep. And, over time, it will get dealt with, in just having relationships and being able to apply, the recovery skills to those situations.
Absolutely. Now, tell me something. This book, who is this book for? Is it just for a single recovering sex addict, or is there a wider audience for the book?
Well, I wrote it because I thought that single sex addicts needed some help, but I also believe that it's for people who are trying to restart an old relationship on some kind of different footing in recovery, because I agree with the view that, an old relationship that's starting over in recovery is, or existing marriage, let's call it, is really a situation of premarital counseling. For me, if I'm counseling a couple that have been through all this treatment stuff, they're different people. They're going to be different people. They've grown a lot. They've changed a lot. They don't even know if they want the same thing in a relationship. So it's really sitting down and looking at what it's the same thing. Same thing as as a single person, in effect. But also, you know, I did some digging, and I realized that I looked at all the people who went through the Sexual Recovery Institute from 2010 to the present,
mm-hmm.
and of them, a certain percentage were married, a larger percentage were married when they first started, and a smaller percentage were single or divorced or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and versus married or living with someone. And, you know, I don't want to bore you with all of it, but basically if you take the statistic that of couples in general who enter therapy, after 5 years, something like 43% of them are divorced. So
43%.
Yeah, so within 5 years, you know, if couples are seeking help, the odds are, you know, that say maybe 40-ish percent of them will end up divorced.
Right.
Which is actually, you know, like 50% of all first marriages end in divorce, so it's not so bad. It's an improvement on that. But then if you put together the single people in recovery with the divorced people who, you know, whose marriages did not survive sex addiction and recovery, it seems to me you can pretty well conclude that maybe at least half of the population of people we're talking about, recovering sex addicts, are going to be in a single or divorced or, you know, not in a relationship category. So, you know, I don't think it's such a small group. I think it's been underestimated, you know, as a group of people that are going to need this kind of, you know, kind of work.
Absolutely. And I get what you're saying there in that not only do you have the people that have not been able to sustain their relationship getting a divorce, but then you also have the people that are single who are working on relationships that are really going to enjoy this book. And I would think that their partners would too, because you've written it generically enough that we all have these issues. That's one of the things that I was saying in the show when I did the addictive relationship self-test.
Mm-hmm.
If you come from a family that doesn't have a lot of self-care, love, nurturing, you know, they didn't talk about feelings, they didn't teach you how to have conflict, you're going to have some problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that partners, you know, will find this useful if just for background information for themselves, but also maybe, you know, it could help them in their own work on themselves too. I don't see why not. But, you know, I just want to add that I didn't really see it as a couple's workbook. And you
right.
know, my philosophy is kind of you got to work on yourself first. And if you're not really, you know, don't really have the skills, the relationship skills, the intimacy abilities, then you need to do a little bit of groundwork at least first before you can do this as a couple. And then, of course, couples work. Yeah, sure, great, after that.
Yeah, although I can see, and I agree with you, yeah, it's not necessarily for couples. But I can see somebody hanging out at someone's home and picking up this book and reading about themselves in relationship with not only the person that they're with, but just in terms of their whole life. I mean, you just give a lot of good, solid advice. So now I've got to
thank
ask
you.
Oh, absolutely. It was just such an easy read. I would recommend that anybody get the book Relationships in Recovery, A Guide for Sex Addicts Who Are Starting Over by Dr. Linda Hatch. And it's really one of a kind. I mean, there just aren't a lot of books out there talking about this issue.
Yeah, thank you. I think so.
So now, let me ask you, do you believe that recovering sex addicts can just go out and start dating and figure it out as they go along?
Well, I think they could try, and I think they would make a lot of mistakes.
Okay.
I think they would probably, you know, keep repeating the same relationship scenario unconsciously. Unless they're really looking for it. I think we have you ever, you know, maybe you've had the experience or talked to people who have had the experience of like, okay, now I'm going to do it differently. And then they meet someone, and they say, oh, this person's really, really different. They're nice. They're not mean, or whatever it was. And then they come to find out, well, it turns out the person is exactly the same. They just didn't catch, you know, of course they didn't catch it, because it's all happening on an unconscious level. So we have, you know, scanners out there for those crazy relationships like we had in the past. So yeah, I think it involves bringing a lot of stuff to conscious awareness and being willing to, you know, really analyze things, look at the compromises that you need to make, look at what you need to let go of, maybe some of the ideas you need to let go of, like that, you know, sex is always going to be over the moon, you know, exciting, like it was in your addictive life, because that was, you know, it was your drug. And it's, if you're giving up your drug, you're not going to get the high in the same way. Like, you could still have a lot of passion, a lot of, you know, erotic pleasure in relationships, in committed relationships, but there's going to be some kind of trade-off. So, you know, I think people, you know, they need to look at that. I had, you know, and here's another aspect of the same thing. I had a woman in recovery who this is just an example, her addictive behavior involved masochism and erotic asphyxiation. So she liked to be strangled during sex. And she laughingly told me that she had at one point thought that she could get in recovery, get a healthy relationship, and act out these masochistic autoerotic erotic asphyxiation fantasies with her partner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's this tendency to think that the reason she was laughing is because she realized it was absurd, but she had actually believed that. Oh, well, I'll just find a good relationship where my partner wants to do this, you know, wants to strangle me.
Right.
So,
right.
You know,
but you know, I find that to be true also, that addicts in recovery wonder if they can go back to some of the same old behaviors that brought about that arousal and that charge. And that's where I think your book is helpful, as well as working with a certified sexual addictions therapist, because clearly there are some behaviors that, yes, you can go back to and get an erotic charge when enough time has gone by and you look at the person intimately as opposed to objectifying them. But something like sadomasochistic behavior is not ever going to fly in a relationship because it's not healthy behavior.
Well, even without trying to define healthy versus not healthy sexual behavior, and there are a lot of people who would say, you know, you can do anything you want. The behavior itself is not what makes it unhealthy. And maybe they have a point. I mean, what someone else finds okay might be, you know, seem really weird to me. But I think the point is that for sex addicts, the rules are a little different. You know, that if you know, an average couple who don't have addiction in their history, you know, want to try something like that, then, you know, fine. I mean, I wouldn't do it, but I'm just not going to sit in judgment on other people's choice of what they choose to do if it's freely chosen, which addiction is not. It's a compulsion, of course. So.
Right. Well, and we probably disagree just a little bit there, and I admire the fact that you're really being non-judgmental. and you know, and I get that for somebody, that might be that way for anal sex, and I would feel that way as you do about anal sex, but asphyxiation and the chance of actually losing consciousness in sex, to me, just is not healthy. And,
well, I'm not advocating it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying
no.
That
I know you're not.
I just know that I get a lot of people angry at me if I say, you know, don't do this. It's not healthy because you know, it takes all kinds, I guess. But I know what you're saying. I agree. I mean, I know what you're saying, and I have my own standards. But at some point, Anyway, my whole point was just that I think sex addicts have to be more careful.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of where they go with their sexuality in a new relationship, how soon they have sex, you know, like you were saying, this is a big deal, you know, because in our society, people who aren't sex addicts, you know, you have sex on the first date. And that's not considered, you know, anything weird. And I really believe that sex addicts can't do that because they have to start to learn how to get to know someone in some other way besides sexually because they've been viewing the world through sex-colored glasses for a long time. And they don't know the person, and you know they just filter everything through that sexual filter.
100%. Now let me ask you just a couple other ideas. You know, in terms of you have these ground rules or boundaries for sex addicts, and you just gave one of them that you know for somebody else, having sex on the first, second, or third date is absolutely normal. But for a sex addict, it's so important to get to know the person on an emotional, social, spiritual level before you dive into sex. That keeps you from objectifying and repeating old patterns. Can you think of some other rules or boundaries for sex addicts that are helpful?
I think one way that I handle this in the book is to suggest that sex addicts make a circle plan for relationship recovery, much the way they did for sex addiction recovery. In other words, it's basically a way to write out kind of the behaviors that are just out of bounds for you completely and the behaviors that are kind of iffy or slippery or may lead you back into, you know, addictive acting out behaviors. And the behaviors that are okay. And that's the circle plan. And so just taking that as it is and adopted it in the book so that people can think about what things could be in their inner circle. So, like, I think in the book, let me just see here. I give examples of things that you or anybody might put in the inner circle. In other words, the things that you're going to plan not to do in your healthy relationship. Such as emailing old girlfriends. Now, this might be okay for somebody, but it might not be okay for a sex addict in a new relationship because those old girlfriends, well, they were probably sort of like acting out partners. So that person's going to maybe say, no, I don't think I ought to do that. Becoming obsessed with or flirting with someone at work. Just things to really watch out for. Insisting maybe that their partner watch porn with them, you know, with all kinds of excuses. Well, you know, this is fun. It's okay if we do it together. You know, well, maybe it might be okay, might not, probably not for most sex addicts in recovery. Comparing, and there's some more emotional things you can put in there, like comparing my partner to other people, comparing my partner unfavorably to other people. Making covert threats, abandonment threats, or, you know, just any kind of manipulation, certain kinds of specific manipulation, whatever that person's, you know, behaviors have been in the past. It's going to be different for everybody. It's very individual in terms of, it's the same thing with sexually addictive behaviors. There's a myriad of them, and it's just what that person can sort of call out for themselves. I know I have one client who typically is either in a sadistic or masochistic role as you, in porn, in his porn addiction watching, but and has relationships, which usually in those relationships he plays a power role. So he's going to have to look out for things like, is this partner or potential partner, you know, equal power to me, equal age, equal, you know, resources, or am I picking someone who I think I have it all over, you know?
Right.
That sort of thing. So a lot of it has to do with choice of partner in the sober dating guide and sober dating, you know, exercises. Making your own plan for sober dating, making your own plan for what, you know, are behaviors you can do and what are behaviors you don't want to do in relationship.
Well, that,
does that
makes
help?
Sense. And again, you're exactly right. I mean, you're customizing based on their needs as well as their old behaviors, potential trigger behaviors, slippery slope behaviors, healthy behaviors, that kind of thing. Can you you identify some healthy behaviors for recovering addicts that are thinking about a relationship?
That are thinking about a relationship? Well, I think it's healthy to start thinking about it and planning about it. But you mean once they start with a partner?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Once they start, I think being committed to getting to know the person. And I think for a long time, as long as, you know, as long as they want, but at least a couple of months before they allow sex to happen, being careful to plan how they're going to talk about their past addiction if the person doesn't already know about it. And I think there's a whole bunch of, you know, intimacy skills that, that people need to remember and practice and think about. And I, you know, I try to write about them, not in terms of exercises so much, but just in terms of my thinking and on, you know, intimacy skills. And I gave some meditation, relationship meditations at the end, but I think there are a lot of spiritual skills that apply to intimacy and intimate relating that people can remember to bring in, like paying attention, listening, being non-judgmental of what they're hearing, being non-reactive to what they're hearing, all those kinds of skills are things that they can begin to practice in relating to, and they're, you know, they're all important in relating to a potential romantic partner, much more so than with, you know, maybe the fellowship or the friends that they have in recovery or what have you.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense that these are relationship skills that you would apply to any relationship, but certainly in a dating relationship, you'd want to develop empathy. You'd want to increase communication skills.
Well, I think also they need to remember not to be reactive to what happens, because I think sex addicts in particular, starting out in relationships, they're going to be frightened, like all of a sudden, unexpectedly, because it's going to be something's going to trigger abandonment fear of losing the relationship. Something's going to trigger fear of engulfment, fear of being swallowed up in the relationship. They'll start to distance. So I think it's really important for people to not just sort of lurch into reacting to those fears and being, you know, really practicing being non-reactive. I'm thinking of one guy I saw who broke up with a woman. He's in recovery. This was a while ago. He broke up with a woman that he had a perfectly good relationship with that had become quite close. But he said he woke up one morning and she realized that she had a completely different spiritual orientation than he did. He was religious and she was into some Eastern thing. And then he broke up with her. You know, it was just like, boom. Some fear overtook him. And I think without preparation, without, you know, having a chance to practice these things and reflect on them and talk to friends about them and, you know, write about them, that you're prone to that.
Well, and, I, you know, that happens a lot just in dating in general, where somebody will be interacting with another person, whether they're an addict or not, and they had some ambivalence about the person, but one day, one thing just automatically triggers them to end the relationship without any respect to that person and giving an explanation to him or her as to what the problems were or the ambivalences. You know, they just stop calling, or worse than that, they text a goodbye statement, and that's it.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing what technology has done in the dating world?
Oh, I know. It's yes, a lot of the problems are problems that people generally have. And I wish everyone could be in recovery and, you know, just get better. I mean, you know, you don't automatically have relationship skills or intimacy skills. It's just not something that everybody is just going to naturally, normally develop. In this day and age, I don't think.
Well, 100%, as well as you make the point throughout your book, that really most people that are at a deficit, that have chosen addiction, didn't have many healthy relationships to model as they were growing up.
Right.
So they kind of create that family of origin issue again and again and again until they start doing things differently. And that's what this book is all about, helping you to develop the skills that you need. It's kind of like you spoon-feed your readers and help them look at their choices and you encourage them to try them out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I hope that people will do, if they get the book, or maybe if the therapist, you know, it could be a workbook that groups could use or therapists could use, and I hope they do with their clients who are a little bit further along, ready to start a relationship. You know, and I'm planning to put all the exercises and inventories and stuff into a packet on my website. I haven't done it yet, so that it can be downloaded. So if somebody just wants the sober dating guide or wants the, you know, relationship timeline or those kinds of things, they can just get it, download it, and have that. But, I, you know, like I said, I haven't done that yet, but I will.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a phenomenal idea, and I imagine that would probably cost the same as the book, but it will get people started quicker on some of the things that they need to work on.
Well, I would hope it would cost less than the book because it would just be a packet of material, you know, download material, but nominal cost was my idea. But,
well,
I know, going back, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I just was, you touched on one of my pet peeves before when you were talking about breaking up, I think one thing that many people are prone to this, but I think sex addicts particularly because of their lack of previous experience with people, real people, and their immersion in fantasy, is that they have an idea that the person has to be, you know, that what's wrong with the relationship is the other person. So that if, you know, they'll say, well, I'm interested in starting a relationship if I meet the right person. And when I hear that, it's like, wait a minute, you know, you're going to know it when you see it? I don't think so. I mean, if you're not, you know, so there's this, like, tendency for that kind of pattern of thinking to lead the person to just go from one person to the next person. Oh, they weren't perfect, you know. It didn't work because they weren't the right person.
Mm-hmm.
And I really challenge that way of thinking.
Well, that makes absolute sense, as well as, you know, so oftentimes it's when an addict is, whether they're in recovery or not, when feelings get uncomfortable, it's just easy, as you indicated earlier, to avoid and to do it quickly and then not to have that empathy. And let's face it, empathy is the number one skill an addict needs in his or her relationship.
Right, I agree.
So you do a lot of talking about empathy.
Yeah, and I think to be empathic takes some development and growth on the part of most addicts. You know, they live their addictive life in themselves, in their heads, in their addiction, and it becomes kind of selfish, self-centered way of living. So empathy isn't usually part of it, and yet, you know, they're called upon to suddenly develop that skill, and I think that takes some practice. I think it's a lot of it is practice, hopefully with the right preparation and hopefully with the right understanding, and then, you know, just going out there and trying to do what you plan to do, have an intention, have a goal. I want a healthy relationship. This is what I want it to look like. I have a new vision. Here's what it is. Find out what the person you're dating wants, for goodness sake. Most people I talk to, they're afraid to say to the person they're dating, you know, are you looking for a relationship? Are you looking for a committed relationship? What do you want? Are you looking to get married? People just don't want to say that. I don't know about your experience, but I don't understand. That seems to be so hard. to get people to do. They're afraid that people, oh, well, forget it, you know.
Yeah, well, exactly my experience. And I do think earlier in the show, before you came on, I was talking about the five fears of intimacy. And truly, my belief is that people are really afraid of rejection. And so if they were to take that risk and say, hey, are you looking for a relationship? You know, are you thinking about a long-term relationship, or are you just wanting to date to have fun? There's that risk that they'll get rejected. And so they think if they don't ask the question, they won't feel the rejection. But what we know is they get involved then and end up, because the boundaries aren't clear, getting rejected quicker and more intensely as a result.
Right, and yeah, and you're not true to yourself if you're not looking for what you're looking for and working toward that goal. I mean, I think, yeah, you need the information, definitely.
So now, how can people get in touch with you or take a look at your website? What would they need to do?
You can get in touch with me easily from my website. There's a tab at the top to email me. I think my phone number is up there on the location tab. I am not hard to reach.
Yeah, you write a blog called Best Sex Addiction Blogs 2013. You're the author of Living with a Sex Addict and, of course, Relationships in Recovery. And your website is www.sexaddictionscounseling.com.
Thank you.
Absolutely, because let's face it, that would probably be the easiest way to get a hold of you and also to check out your work. I really strongly believe in blogs because it gives people a flavor for who you are. And certainly, in my short time with you, you are very easy to talk to. You're very non-judgmental. You're such a good writer. And, you know, you would be a therapist that a recovering addict would feel comfortable working with. Now, what area of the world do you live in?
I live in Santa Barbara, California, and
oh,
I have a small practice, but mostly I write, actually. I do see clients, but I do a lot of writing. I also blog on, by the way, the best blogs was some little award I got. That's not the name of my own blog, but my blog is just my blog is just on my website.
What is the name of your blog?
It's just the blog. It's on my it's on the homepage of my webpage. It's mostly that, and then a lot of other informational stuff that people might, you know, resources people might need, which they can find other pages on the blog, on the website. The website is sexaddictionspluralcounseling.com. But I also blog on psychcentral.com. I have a regular blog column on psychcentral.com, which is a psychology website. And that's interesting because it's called The Impact of Sex Addiction. So I just deal with all kinds of topics relating to sex addiction and the impact on families, on couples, on partners, betrayal, all of that kind of stuff. And that's an interesting website because they have very active forums in the comment section for each blog. And so sometimes a very lively conversation going on about the topic. So I hope people can check that out too.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Linda Hatch, thank you so much for talking with us tonight and also, obviously, for writing the book, Relationships in Recovery, A Guide for Sex Addicts Who Are Starting Over, because this is such a needed topic, and the information is invaluable. So appreciate your work. Keep up the phenomenal writing, and let me know when you write your next book.
Okay, I certainly will. You've been great to talk to, and thanks for having me so much.
All right, Dr. Hatch, have a great night.
Thank you. Bye.
So that, again, was Dr. Linda Hatch writing Relationships in Recovery, A Guide for Sex Addicts Who Are Starting Over. Anybody who's single and just getting into relationship or wanting to, I highly recommend it. So next week is Labor Day, and we're going to have a repeat of a phenomenal show. But in the meantime, we'll be talking to you in 2 weeks. So as I always say, fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch you live in 2 weeks. Have a great one.